Dias van Opdorp here with Ross Dunbar, Stefan Biankowski, and Jonathan Harding. And it was another eventful match day in the Bundesliga after a pointless international break. And the biggest game, I think we can all agree on the weekend, was Leipzig's first home game of their very short history. They beat Borussia Dortmund 1-0 with Naby Keita, one of their expensive signings, combining with Oliver Burke, one of their other expensive signings, for their, as the Scotsmen in the crowd pump their fists. But it was a very disappointing performance, we can all say, for Dortmund. That's what Thomas Tuchel, of course, said after the game, and so did a bunch of other people in the Dortmund front office. So I guess my first question, Jonathan, is what are we supposed to take from this Dortmund side, considering they made so many changes, and the fact that they had a lot of people in international break, and the fact that they were playing a very defensive Leipzig team?
Well, I think they said it themselves. Thomas Tuchel said it, and then a lot of the players said it after the game, that they didn't do the things that they said beforehand that they were going to do. They planned certainly to have more shots on goal, and I think Mario Götze spoke about it, Andre Schürrle spoke about it, Schmelzer spoke about it. They all said, you know, you can't win a game if you're not going to have shots on goal. And I think they had one or two, maybe, I think it was only one on target. You know, you can't realistically win a game if you're not going to have any attempts on goal. I don't even remember a time where Leipzig's goalkeeper was even troubled, and I think that's really concerning for a side that spent so much money on their attack in the summer. But it wasn't just that, you know. Defensively, they looked a bit rushed and hurried. Midfield never really got their rhythm going. It was just a really disappointing, disjointed performance. I mean, there were encouraging moments in the first half. I know Steph disagrees with me, but I thought Mario Götze actually looked very tidy in the first half. Good touches, good intent. But it didn't really result in anything. You know, Schürrle puts one just wide, and in the second half, he hits the bar. It was all just a little bit half chance. You know, it was all a bit not very much. And I think from Dortmund, you expect a lot more. And yeah, can't afford that on the second match day. International break or not, it's just not acceptable from them.
Yeah. A lot of defense from Thomas Tuchel on Mario Götze, saying, basically asking everybody, not just the media, but all the fans that the media was basically reporting to have patience with Mario Götze. But Stefan, you were very verbal this weekend of not being happy with Mario Götze. What did you see, want from him that you didn't see?
He didn't do enough. Simple as that, really. I think Tuchel was notably agitated in the pre-match chat with the Sky reporter outside the pitch about constant questions and speculation over Mario Götze. Why hasn't he played? Oh, why is he now playing? Blah, blah, blah. And he said, look, I'm sick of answering questions about this. We've got 20 other internationals in our squad. No one asks about them. What's this big deal about Mario Götze? And he's right to an extent. There are other players in Dortmund's squad, arguably better players right now in their squad, and more important players in their squad. But the fact is, on Saturday, Tuchel made the decision to play Mario Götze as his number 10, and that didn't work out. It wasn't solely Götze's fault. I thought Aubameyang was very quiet. I thought Schürrle was clumsy, although I actually think Schürrle is probably one of their better players, actually. Roda was all over the place. Castro did nothing. Castro got pushed out right, and he was just completely ineffective. And of course, Bartra looked like Bambi on ice. But to focus on Götze momentarily here before I move on to my other point about Dortmund, let's make a comparison to Serge Gnabry, who made his debut for Werder Bremen this weekend. Gnabry is a young player, he's untested. He came into this Bremen team on the weekend and he tried his best. It was an average performance. No one's really expecting him to hit the ground running because he's a young player and he will be given time to come into that team. Mario Götze isn't that player. And as I try to preempt what John's probably going to reply with here, I don't think Mario Götze should be given the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he should be given time to bed into this Dortmund team because he's not playing for Werder Bremen. He's playing for Dortmund. Dortmund have to win every game if they want to challenge Bayern. And I don't ultimately blame Götze for this because he's been through a difficult position. I blame Thomas Tuchel for thinking he can drop Götze into an away game at Leipzig and just assume he's going to be okay. Götze shouldn't have been... If there's any doubt over whether Götze was going to perform or not, he shouldn't have started on Saturday. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, let me ask this to Ross, because I actually was thinking about this when you guys were having this discussion. Why are we having this discussion about Mario Götze so much? I mean, he has been... I mean, obviously, he's such a polarizing player because of his moves. But I think a lot of people can agree that he's not the player that... moved to Bayern. So why is everybody so fascinated? Why is the media so fascinated? Why is people in the stands so fascinated with how this guy's going to do?
Because he's a celebrity.
Is that the only reason? But I mean, there's a lot of other celebrities in that Dortmund team too.
Yeah, but he's a personality, and I mean, way off tangent here, but celebrities sell newspapers. You know, big companies want them to endorse. I mean, you see Mario Götze when he was at his best. I mean, he was, you know, on TV.
And he's a World Cup winner.
I mean, I don't really know what to say. I mean, I think that's...
He's a poster boy.
Poster boy for German football. I just wanted to kind of go back to the point that you made there. I think if you look at it from the point of view that Dortmund should challenge Bayern this year, then I think the argument is a little bit different. I didn't expect Dortmund to challenge Bayern this year.
Yeah, exactly.
But you expect them to beat Leipzig.
Yeah, maybe, possibly. Yeah, probably. But I think this team does need time to bed in. You made a couple of good points there. I think Schürrle was clumsy. The whole balance didn't look particularly good. I mean, there was no kind of one-on-one player who could beat a man like Dembele, for example, or Pulisic.
He was great, wasn't he? Dembele. God, love that kid.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you've got to have
your
a balance.
Hate campaign is building momentum.
Says the man who's just been hating on Mario.
For those guys listening, that was sarcasm. That was not a serious statement from John.
Look at the balance of the midfield, though. You had Weigl, you know. He's good on the ball. You had Roda, you had Castro, you had Schürrle. Four guys there who offer largely kind of the same thing. Nothing much going forward. Götze is not a guy who's going to beat 10 men in stick.
Not anymore,
corner.
No.
No, he likes everything, but there's nobody there who can do something extra special. I think that's the biggest problem, because Leipzig are a good side.
Yeah.
They were really well organised and their pressing was fantastic. But you need a guy who's going to do something different.
I think in that discussion...
I think Pulisic should
yeah,
be involved.
Yeah, I think in that discussion we have kind of forgotten, you know, we're talking, you know, saying, oh, Dortmund haven't played well, Götze haven't played well, but, you know, on the flip side, Leipzig played well. And maybe that's the reason that Dortmund didn't play well. You know, that's perfectly logical. We don't always have to say, oh, you know, Dortmund have to keep up with Bayern, they have to win every game. Yeah, sure, but... Leipzig deserve to win the game.
Well, they shouldn't be expected to compete with Bayern.
No,
I agree.
To beat Leipzig, understandably. But that's not to say that on a given day, teams like Leipzig can do it.
Yeah, Stefan Ersanker got top marks from a lot of people. That, to your point, Ersanker, of course, played in central midfield for Leipzig two nights ago. So, Stefan, should we put more credit on, should we therefore put more credit on Leipzig's performance than actually Dortmund's shortcomings?
Yeah, I thought the tactics were spot on. The time that he brought Keita and Burke on was fantastic. I think I was watching the game with John, and I was saying, like, at that point in the game, actually, Leipzig were the team that looked like they had the extra gear, and they looked like the team who actually pushed on for a winner. Dortmund, it got to maybe the 70th or 80th minute, and Dortmund just didn't look like they had nothing. And then Leipzig bring on these two guys, and within, not only did Burke set up the goal, I know I'm Scottish, I'm biased, but he actually, as soon as he came on, he literally wandered onto the pitch, went up front, took a ball, turned, and he played Werner in straight away. Werner ended up turning out, so didn't do much, but it's a great ball straight away. And so instantly they had these guys to come off the bench and then go up an extra gear. Dortmund didn't have that.
Well, they did. They had their guys to come off the bench to take them up to a next gear, but they didn't do it, and that's what's interesting. You know, you bring on Dembele, he doesn't bring you up to the next gear, but you bring on Oliver Burke and he does.
This is the second Dortmund point I was going to make, but before I do, I just want to say it's worth also noting that Leipzig did this without actually playing. Starting any of the guys they signed on the deadline day.
Yeah, I was going to say that because Timo Werner was the only guy that they signed in the summer that played last night.
But not even just that, the two central defenders they signed on the deadline day, who I thought were going to get parachuted straight into that team considering how defensively, you know, unsolid, I don't know the word I'm looking for. In the first match day, Papadopoulos and Bernardo... I really thought would start. I don't know, I think Bernardo might be injured because he wasn't even in the match they scored, but I was amazed to find that these guys, they didn't even start, the new guys, and they still did so well. Mm-hmm. Now, the point, the other dormant point I wanted to make was that before the game on Twitter, I kind of took a list of all the players who weren't even in the match day squad and the players on the bench, and I was like, God, look at the amount of depth that Dortmund has. And people quite rightfully are making a big deal about that, but the interesting thing is that they have this much depth, but they didn't really seem to have any match winners. So, for example, Gotsa came in for Kagawa because Kagawa didn't look so good in the last couple of games.
Well, he came from Japan too.
And we're seeing players like you say, like Dembele comes in. Adrian Ramos came on for Aubameyang because he didn't look so good. These guys didn't do anything, you know. And that's maybe it's a good thing that Dortmund have this squad of like 30 players, but would you rather have five solid alternatives rather than 15 average ones? And I think that's maybe a problem that Dortmund might have to address, because
I think it's a bit soon to say that. After two match days, we've been lamenting the fact that Dortmund haven't had any depth over the last few seasons with all of the competitions that they have to play, and now they're back in the Champions League. Especially if form drops out, you need that kind of form. That kind of depth.
But when you're chasing a game and the only guy you have to come on for Aubameyang is Adrian Ramos.
Yeah, agreed. But that's a unique example, I think. You know, if you're chasing a game and you bring on Ousmane Dembele, I want to see more than YouTube clips.
Yeah, that's another point. I mean, I saw a notable notable Bundesliga reporters retweeting a bit of skill that Dembele did in that game.
And what follows the clip that isn't on the clip? Exactly. What follows that? The fact that he loses it, or he like dives straight into a tackle, or he kicks the ball out. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, we can all do wonderful little bits of tricks now again, but if it's not effective in the game, spare me the details.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I mean, I think if you look at it from the point of view that Dortmund are going to challenge Bayern Munich this year, I think you're going to be disappointed. I mean, I look at the team they've got, and although I like Cash, I think he's a really good player. It's not a player you can play on the right-hand side. They have no width. Yeah. I think Leipzig played very similar to how Borussia Mönchengladbach played under Favre. Very compact, really aggressive pressing, and really direct. So when they get the ball, the first instinct is get it forward. And you made the point there about Burke. First instinct when he gets the ball is get it forward. Mm. And I think Noah Hasenhüttl said that, you know, his hard drive is quite empty, he doesn't know how to defend, but that was exactly what they needed at the right time. And Dortmund didn't have anything... an attack to counter it.
I think tactically Dortmund I think Tuchel actually more than anything, I know he said after the game, oh, I know which my players performed and which ones didn't. I think Tuchel needs to sit down and look at himself, because the way he set up his team on Saturday didn't work at all. He should know putting Castro out right does absolutely nothing for him. Yeah. But he should know that, like we were saying before,
putting Rode so deep, that doesn't do anything for him either. But I mean, that probably was his response for how much they were pressing.
We were saying about Piszczek had a few moments of, you know, going
really
forward,
exposed.
But we were both saying, why isn't Pasalek playing? He looks so good.
It's a strange one, isn't it?
So I think Tuchel has to take some of his blame rather than just blaming his own players.
I think the other thing we should mention that we haven't mentioned up until this point, how significant a victory this is for Leipzig, given the entire background narrative, given the fact that this is their debut in the top flight, given the model that they have brought to German football and all of the headlines that have come with that. Hasenhüttl said after the game, we don't need to make ourselves any smaller. You know, we're here to compete with the big boys. And I think it's very interesting. You know, you've talked about it before, Russ, in the build-up to this season, saying, you know, Leipzig are an interesting model. You know, over the next 5 to 10 years, are they going to start being a side that challenges Bayern, starting to change up and shake up the Bundesliga? That's what they obviously want to do. Obviously, it's popular with some people, not popular with others. That's completely understandable. But this win is kind of a symbolization of, hey, you know, we're here and we're here to stay.
Well, it seems also like they have the right man in charge. I mean, you looked at Hasenhüttl, and what I was reminded of was the Ingolstadt game against Bayern in Allianz Arena last fall, and how well, even though Ingolstadt's players was not even on a close to a level that Bayern's players were, they were all worked hard. And last night you saw Yusuf Poulsen; he didn't have a single shot, and yet he had a good game by Hasenhüttl's standards, because he put the defense under pressure the entire game, and that was the whole point, was the count. So I have to ask, though, Hasenhüttl, are we giving him enough credit for what he's doing, not only at Ingolstadt, or is he one of the best managers now in Bundesliga?
I think he does. I think what he does really well. Yeah. I thought it was quite funny, actually. It's kind of a typical comment from him after the game to pick out the guy who set up the goal to say, oh, he didn't do enough tracking back. You know, it's like, he won the game for you, but he didn't do enough defending. So I think he's a certain type of coach.
Yeah.
I think he's exactly where he should be. I think Leipzig are an ambitious team. He's a club. He's a coach. He could probably take them very far. I don't know how far that will be, but we'll see. But just to echo John's point about, you know, what this means for the club, first ever home game in the Bundesliga to beat Borussia Dortmund.
Exactly.
And to be, I think a lot of Bundesliga fans might not appreciate hearing this point. I frankly don't care. I think Leipzig deserve... I'm kind of sick of the constant criticism this club have been getting. If you don't like the model that they run by, that's fine. But to suggest anything other than the fact that there's 50,000 fans there on Saturday who were absolutely delirious of beating Borussia Dortmund, and just the way the fans... the way that the players on the pitch, the squad, the coach, and then the fans, a number of fans managed to celebrate that goal. If you don't like that, then... You know, you don't like football, in my opinion. I don't care how the club are run. In my opinion, it's not that different from some of the big clubs in the Bundesliga right now. A lot of the clubs who preach that they are old-fashioned football clubs for the fans. I'm not going to point any fingers, but I'm sure people can draw some conclusions. But anyway, I think Leipzig deserve, the fans deserve this, and I was more than happy to see them celebrate that win.
I'm not a fan of the model. I'm not a fan of anybody who's, you know, 7-year-old team, you know, bursting into the top flight. But
Well, so keep in mind also, it's a seven... I mean, Ingolstadt is also only a 12-year-old
team.
Ingolstadt is did it the traditional way of merging clubs together. What Leipzig did, basically, is Red Bull came in, bought a club, and then basically did it like a traditional franchise business model.
I don't want to get bogged down in the discussion, because I think Steph is right. You know, it's been said and done and written and spoken about everywhere. I think... Whether you don't have to like the model, and I'm not a big fan of it, and I think I'm not a fan of the lack of clarity and honesty about it. That's for sure. But you can't deny that they played well. You can't deny that for East Germany, this is a huge moment. A nation, if you like, that has been starved of top flight football for a number of years, and the significance of that for Germany as a whole and the repercussions. It's basically, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, a big moment in the history of German football that we witnessed on Saturday.
Well, if you liked the gegenpressing game, then you probably liked Schalke's performance on Friday as well.
From gegenpressing to Gelsenkirchen.
Very nice.
Exactly.
Very nice.
So, Schalke, of course, lost 2-0, but for the first 80 minutes of that game, they looked a completely different team that lost to Frankfurt in the first match day. I think we can all agree with that there. So, Bayern Munich, of course, were Bayern Munich, came up with a big goal. Javi Martinez coming up with a huge contribution again to get a game winner. Of course, he did that last year in the away fixture of this matchup as well. So, a little bit of their kryptonite. But I have to ask John, the midfield for... Schalke was completely different, but looked more like a Vine Serial team, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wrote afterwards that I felt like even though they lost, it's funny, Steph was talking about being sick of hearing certain narratives. I'm sick of hearing, well, Bayern won again. You know, actually, if you watch the game, it wasn't about Bayern. It was about Schalke discovering that this season is going to be a good season because it was finally Marcus Weinzierl's team arriving. You know, they were absolutely rubbish against Frankfurt on the opening match day, Yeah, in the second game, and against Bayern Munich, you know, of all the possible opponents against the best team in Germany, they delivered a fantastic performance. Your 10 minutes were missing. Yes, okay, it's frustrating. Yes, okay, we've seen it before. And yes, Bayern always win these games. But hey, can we flip it round and give Schalke some credit? Because this is a club who've constantly been driven into the dust by terrible headlines and, you know, shooting themselves in the foot. And here they are, finally, with a good quality set of players. You know, Stambouli, Bentaleb adding some serious bite into that midfield. I was really impressed with the way that they played and how hard they worked. If they had a striker that wasn't so long in the tooth, then maybe it would have been different. And that doesn't mean Franco Di Santo, by the way, because he's just nothing. Mm-hmm. Then it would have been different. But, you know, Schalke deserve a lot of credit. They've got a stretch. We talked about it recently, Steph, that they have a stretch of games now where if they can put some form together, then, hey, you know, people would be like, yeah, all right, here we go, Schalke 2.0. And I think I was there on Gelsenkirchen, the training ground, the morning after that on Saturday morning. Every fan that I spoke to was like, yeah, feel different dynamic. It's a different feeling. And it's easy, you know, people say, yeah, well, football fans, they're going to be biased. And it's true. But Schalke fans know more than most how difficult their club is and how ridiculous and how often they've been in this situation. And they were genuine. They said, look, Weinzierl knows what he's doing. Heidel's no fool. We've got a game plan. We played well against Bayern. Feeling positive.
Well, obviously, Ross, the midfield performance on Friday did not reflect well on Johannes Geis. He obviously played the first game, and now two players came in to replace him, and they looked like a much better combination, along with Leon Goretzka also, by the way, that we shouldn't forget about either. Is Johannes Geis basically done in this team, or is he, do you think, is he the kind of player that Gyce wants, or is he, or they, does Weinzer want to do something different with that midfield, what, like we saw on Friday?
I'm going
to
pop John's balloon here in big time. Yeah, I mean, they did. They run about a lot, but they lost to Frankfurt. And ultimately, that's still the game that reflects badly on Weinzer. Anyone can do that against Bayern.
Great. No, anyone cannot play that way against Bayern.
But you can run around a lot, you can press, you can hassle, you can tackle, but...
No, but nobody does. That's the point. Anybody can.
A lot of teams do that.
No, they don't. Not very many teams get within 10 minutes of beating them. Yes, okay, you're still losing.
Darmstadt were 1-0 up at the Allianz Arena for, well, 30, 40 minutes, and they lost 2 league goals. This happens quite a lot.
I think
you have to wait until you see Schalke play against your kind of Darmstadt and your Ingolstadt and your Freiburgs and your Leverkusen and things like that, because, you know, they dropped Max Meyer, they dropped Mbolo. These guys are probably going to go back into the team. What difference is that going to make?
You know, well, understandable why he dropped Max Meyer. Max Meyer's probably got about 10% battery.
Mbolo,
he should have started.
He didn't drop Mbolo because he never started
the first game. These guys are going to be involved in the team going forward. I just think you can't judge anything out of that game. I just think Schalke did well. They worked hard, but you know, let's see how they do in the next couple of weeks.
I think I'm probably somewhere between you two.
Oh, you diplomat, you.
He's literally between them two.
I'm quite literally between you both, and. Yeah, in terms of this point, I think if Schalke hadn't started Huntelaar up front, they probably would have won this game. And that actually stood out for me. It was quite worrying. Throughout the match, I was screaming about this on Twitter. I was like, why does Huntelaar still play? That's like the kryptonite to every Schalke manager right now. They feel obliged to play Huntelaar. He seems to be bigger than the coach, and I really hope that Weinzierl would have came in and changed that. That performance on Friday suggests that that's not the case, at least yet. It doesn't feel as though he has...
It definitely did feel like one of these things didn't belong here, and that was Klaas-Jan Huntelaar.
Yeah, well, it's a power...
That's really harsh, right? It's a power... That's really
harsh. He was dreadful.
Yeah, but...
And he's always dreadful, and he always plays no matter what. When you sign a player like Mbolo, why do you not play him? Why the hell is Huntelaar still playing up front for Schalke?
Because, to use Hasenhüttl's phrase, probably his hard drive is more stacked. He defends well.
I'm sorry, no.
The front well.
Anyone,
he's the captain.
I don't care. Anyone who watched that game on Friday would have said Huntelaar was the worst player in Schalke's team. He was Bayern's best defender for so much of that game.
Well, he's a club record signing.
That doesn't mean he's
going to be. No, I'm not saying it does, but you're going to sign someone and break the club's record and have him on the bench?
Leipzig did it.
It's not. No, hold on.
Yeah, but Leipzig do it every week.
The hope of large parts of last season was the same with Huntelaar.
But if we're going with that logic, Max Meyer should be in the team. But Max Meyer wouldn't
have
done the job.
Max Meyer was knackered.
But Max Meyer wouldn't have done the job that Goretzka would have, or Stambouli.
No.
There was a reason they did that. There was a reason that they had all these guys. I mean, pretty much all of the team was nearly over 6 foot. There's a reason for that. They wanted to be aggressive. They
wanted to
shake it up. Sharon
Bowles not far off
Huntelaar.
Bowles a big boy.
Yeah. Anyway, let me finish my point. The point I was making is that I thought that Schalke team were solid from back to front, aside from Huntelaar. They looked a little blunt in attack at times, but they still made a number of great chances. And I can agree broadly with what John's saying. It's a much better performance than the one we saw against Frankfurt. Maybe it's a simple case of Weinzierl just, you know, proper hairdryer treatment after the Frankfurt game. He scared the crap out of the players, and then they really put on a performance. But at the same time, I can see where Ross is coming from. A lot of teams do raise their game when Bayern come to town, and Schalke, kind of over the last two or three seasons, regardless of the coach, tend to actually play a lot better in the big games, whether or not they don't win them or not. It's just the sheer occasion tends to get to players, because they do have good players, and when the occasion comes, they tend to pick up, they pick up their performance. I think Goretzka deserves a huge amount of, really need to point him out, because I think if you ask a lot of fans and people around the club at Schalke, they'll probably tell you that amongst your Max Meyers and your Leroy Sanés, I think a lot of people probably rate Goretzka the highest out of them all, actually.
Just needs to stay fit.
Yeah, and if he can stay fit, then forget Julian Brandt, forget Sané, forget Meyer. Goretzka could be the best of them all if he can
no
stay
chance.
Fit.
No way.
I thought he was outstanding on Friday. And if he stays fit, he's got just as much
potential. To come back to that point, Ross, about, yeah, I'm not sure I necessarily agree about teams raising their game against Bayern. I think it's something that happens some weeks, but I don't think there's a pattern to it. I think some teams are woeful against Bayern, and I agree that after two match days, it's hard to form concrete, you know, opinions on how Schalke are going to be for the rest of the season. But, you know, we can only work off too much data. And, well, given that that's the only, or these are the only pieces of evidence that I have, that we have, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing for Schalke this season, because finally they have quality players. In the last few years, the players that they've signed haven't necessarily been the level that they've needed. You know, Stambouli comes from PSG, right? That's great. Yeah. Bentaleb comes from Premier League from Tottenham. That's great. These are the level of signings. And that's Heidel. You know, I know you like Heidel. Mm-hmm. He's getting the right quality of players. Koke, big loss. But again, right type of, you know, winner, right type of player. Okay, Naldo, big question mark, you know. Got the maneuverability of of an elephant. But
he also was at fault for the
goal. Yeah, absolutely. But Nastasic was great, you know. And I think there are a lot more positives. The quality of the Schalke team has gone up a notch. Yeah, let's see. Maybe in 2 weeks they've played terribly and well, I can shake your hand and say you were right. But right now, I can't help but think that this is a good sign and that Schalke are going to have a good season.
Yeah, well, if it was a good sign, so they played really well for 80 minutes, right? And I think that's the catchphrase that a lot of people have used. They played well for 80 minutes, but the games are 90.
Yes.
So where did it all fall apart then?
Well, you get
Naldo.
Yeah. Well, that certainly is a point, but I think the intensity at which you have to play against Bayern is very draining. And I'm not making an excuse, because if you play 80 minutes well, then you can play 90 minutes well. And then they were close enough to get a result.
They
didn't get a result. Javi Martinez plays one of the best passes I think I've seen in the last 6 months. That's an incredible pass.
Yes.
And watch the difference between Bayern Munich and every other team in the Bundesliga. Robert Lewandowski. I'm sorry, but you saw it. For Dortmund against Leipzig, they didn't have someone who took the game by the scruff of the neck. And Lewandowski is a player in this game who missed a sitter, who missed two sitters,
right?
And still had a situation in his head where he's like, I have the clarity of mind to say I'm going to go win this game. Look at that finish. First touch is incredible, the finish is incredible, and he even assists one. Not many players will be in that situation, have the ability to keep their head clear and their mind free and not be thinking, oh my God, I've lost the game because I missed two chances.
Yeah.
But think, I'm Robert Lewandowski, I'm one of the best strikers in the world. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference, so often.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's one good performance, one bad performance. The next three games are very winnable for Schalke, so I think that's probably where we'll find out where exactly they are right now. To move on to Bayern briefly, I thought it was interesting that, again, they started the game very slowly. There wasn't the same sort of intensity we were used to under Pep Guardiola.
Well, that's an interesting point, because whenever Guardiola put a lot of weight on the league, and he said that many times. Now, whatever he says and whatever, nobody can believe what he says. I mean, he said Willy Caballero had put in the best performance after watching Claudio Bravo put in the best performance after watching Manuel Neuer for 3 years. So, but he really put, if anything, he put a lot of weight on the Bundesliga. Whenever Bayern took the field in the Bundesliga, they really came out with initiative and tried to win every single game. That initiative is not there with Carlo Ancelotti, and they looked like they were going to drop points.
Yeah, I thought Bayern were very sloppy. Like you said, the moment from Martinez to play through Lewandowski just came out of nowhere, really. Really didn't. You can say it's typical Bayern to kind of stumble through a game and win. That's fine. But there was no, like, Renato Sanchez, for example, he was just dropped into this midfield for really no rhyme or reason, in my opinion.
Well, the reason, well, there is a reason.
Why is there a reason?
Because Vidal came back on Thursday from
the
World Cup.
Why the hell isn't Joshua Kimmich playing?
Because Joshua Kimmich is not to Vidal. Because I agree with you, he probably should be in the team.
Kimmich should have been playing that central midfield role from the very start.
Yeah, but
you can't play Sanchez just because they signed him.
No, but he's very similar to Arturo Vidal.
Right. Well, I think Kimmich would have been perfect.
I think Kimmich
should
have been in Stratiago.
I don't disagree. But then you can't say you can't play Sanchez. You have to play Sanchez just because you signed him. Well, then we can't lambast Mario Götze just because he played poorly for 20 minutes.
Well, maybe, but I just
follows the same line.
Point I'm making is Sanchez, I thought, was very poor.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I was saying to you, John, after the game, I was like, if Joshua Kimmich spends this season on the bench, then he's probably going to wonder where his future lies with Bayern, because it's not as if Sanchez is any older than him or anything. Vidal's been around for a while.
I think he will get games anyway. I think he'll play probably.
Well, Phil Blam was also quite poor as well.
Well, Thomas Müller had kind of this situation as well 2 years ago when he was looking to sign an extension, and Mario Götze was obviously in the team, and Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben were still playing at a really high level, and they were about to bring in Robert Lewandowski, and one had to wonder, is Thomas Müller really going to... Is he going to eventually blossom into the player he is? Now, Of course, Pep Guardiola committed to Müller behind Lewandowski, and the rest is history. So you have to wonder if Kimmich just needs someone that basically the manager to say, you know what, I don't care what other options I have, you have to be one of the first options. And whether he gets that...
Xabi Alonso didn't play well either, and you know his contract, I think, runs out at the end of this season.
Yeah, he signed a one-year extension. So,
I mean, you know, he's also... not getting any younger.
Yeah, I'm sure Ancelotti probably behind closed doors might have said that, you know, Lam's not getting any younger, Alonso's not getting any younger, you'll get plenty of chances.
I'm sure that will be the case. The kid has had a sensational summer, he scored again, not that it's about the goals, but his general performance, his liveliness, you know, his ability to develop is great. I actually thought it was interesting that Franck Ribéry played well.
And he got taken off.
Yeah, but
for Douglas Costa.
And then that's the kind of change that Schalke just, you know,
they can't do again.
You can't just put your head in your hands at that point. You know, bring on Douglas Costa for Franck Ribéry.
You can bring Breel and Bolo on though.
Yeah, it's true. Or you just start him, or just start him. But I actually thought it was interesting the way that some players in that Bayern team, you know, surprised. I didn't think Franck Ribéry would come back and play well again, particularly in the first half, given his age. It's interesting to watch. Again, I'm still not convinced about Mats Hummels. I don't know. He hasn't necessarily played as well. I cannot wait for Boateng to return.
I find this really interesting though about this change from Guardiola to Ancelotti, because they play like two almost really kind of polar opposites.
Yeah, absolutely.
Play. I mean, Ancelotti's big focus is defence.
Yeah.
Almost kind of taking the shackles off the front three, because when Guardiola would have been the coach, Thomas Müller would have been told, you have to be in this position.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you want to do. Doesn't matter if you want to, you know, chase spaces and all that kind of nonsense. You have to be in that position. Same with Franck Ribéry. And these kind of characters don't strike me as the guys who would
respond well
to
that.
But you actually saw that, even though I'm a big critic of Thomas Müller, I just thought he played really well in that game.
Should have scored though.
Yeah, he should have, yeah. Well, I think he finds space really well. And I think you might see in this Ancelotti team that Thomas Müller might actually
get more freedom. Well,
let me ask a general question to the table, because I'm curious to the answer as well. Did Ancelotti get this team selection right? Would you say that he got this team selection right?
I can't really fault any...
other than Sanchez?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I don't think you can...
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine. I know I'm not answering your question directly, but what you just said about Müller was exactly what I said in the preview. Not that I'm saying you're copying me, but that's one of the things... I was looking forward to, the fact that Ancelotti does let the big players up front do their own thing.
Ancelotti committed to... He told the journalists at the press conference, this is my front three. This is who's going to be playing against Schalke. So I wonder if that had a role to play on it.
Well, I think when you look at interviews with players like from Real Madrid, Chelsea, blah, 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 PSG, the kind of overall arching theme is that Ancelotti is just very good at making the best players feel very comfortable.
Yes, great man management.
More than anything else, and I think that kind of stands out. I mean, I know he's a very good tactician and things, but I think his key ability as a manager is that he's very good at getting everyone under his wing and making sure everyone plays hard for him. Slightly different from Pep Guardiola. It's just he takes a more hands-off approach, maybe, and he kind of puts his arm around players, like, for example, like Ronaldo or something.
I was going to say, you only have to look at the list of players who speak highly of him to know that. And after Guardiola, it's probably the best thing that Bayern could have had. You know, very intense, grumpy character.
Mm-hmm. But
now you've got Carlo, very relaxed, looking after players.
To go off of that argument, I think that is why he played a guy like Renato Sanchez against Schalke, because when is the other chance that he's going to
Yeah, but
do
he didn't
it?
Look ready, you know? Why don't you play him in a game where you know you're going to have a
yeah, little... I don't know.
How do you know we see if he's going to be ready or not? You could see
him
in training,
I think physically he looked ready. I just think it seemed to me like the occasion got to him.
His point was though, he didn't want to kill his team in the first month of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. He's talked about rotation.
And I know you're saying that about Kimmich, and I agree that I really want to see him in the team, but... I mean, I know you said that he's a good tactician, but I think Ancelotti, compared to Guardiola, is quite limited tactically. He's going to play this style the whole season. It's going to be the same midfield balance of holding midfielder, ball player, and kind of chaos guy like Vidal.
Mm.
And you're only going to switch light for light. You're not going to put square pegs in round holes.
Exactly. It's very predictable, coach.
Yeah, but I could go either way. I mean,
kinds. That's the good point, because there's two kinds. There's the predictable coach that doesn't care and just is going to do it, and everybody knows that what he's going to do, and you just have to adjust to it or not. And there's the other manager, which is Pep Guardiola, which is like, this team that I'm facing is playing a certain way, so I have to adjust my team.
Well,
don't you think, Ross, are you just saying, you know, like, don't you think that will work out well, even if he's limited based on the freedom he's giving his attacking players?
I think it could go either way.
Let me give you an example where that went wrong for Pep. in his first season against Real Madrid in the semi-final, he overthought everything. According to his book,
he listened to the players
yeah. and he thought so hard about it, and he tried to be such a nice guy, so he flipped flipped on his head and went all out attack against Real Madrid, and then it fell on its backside. Last season against Atletico, he overthought things and thought, I'm dropping Thomas Müller. That didn't work out so well either.
That's fine.
But the point I'm making is that that's not going to happen with Ancelotti. He's just going to stay true to a very simple system.
Yeah.
And it might be predictable, and it might mean teams know exactly how to play against them, but we're not going to see those kind of shocks.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what that's exactly what Ancelotti's here for.
Yeah.
He's this slow and steady progression to a Champions League final.
Plus, he's got the best experience to get them as far as they need to. In that
his league record overall hasn't been great.
No,
I think that's
true.
A reflection of his style.
Absolutely.
Because I think probably there has been teams in the past, and I'm not saying this Bayern team will, because that's what we'll find out, but I think teams in the past, perhaps at AC Milan, maybe there were guys in that squad who would take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You maybe guys who would take advantage of the fact that he's not got Guardiola ramming down his throat every day at training, you know, and even look at the way, I mean, for example, Guardiola was not allowing players to speak to the media up to like 60 hours before a game.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're playing 3-4 games a week, or two games a week, whatever, that's quite intense.
Mm-hmm.
Ancelotti's not going to do that. Ancelotti's thing is, do what you want, and hey, have pizza, yeah, let's have karaoke, you know.
Do you know the last man who did that? Your pikers.
I mean, exactly. I think he was quite intense as well. Like,
he was
a good tactician.
Too.
I mean,
he's just a local.
But he had a bit more of a balance. Yeah, I think he fit the club ethos.
Yeah.
Because Bayern is a family club.
Exactly.
It's all about this kind of, you know, Bavarian kind of lifestyle, and I think Ancelotti.
He's a coach.
Fits that more than.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see after this is all said and done in 2 or 3 seasons who someone like Jerome Boateng would have preferred, because Boateng, you know, he lived and breathed for Pep Guardiola.
That's true.
Wonder if he'll still.
But then again,
the
he's probably going to be more successful
under Ancelotti, maybe
internationally.
Yeah.
Sorry, European.
Remains to be seen.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of the Champions League, it's starting up again this week, and of course the Dortmund and Bayern matchups aren't really that interesting because they're both playing the pot four teams of their group. So there is Bayern Munich, of course, are playing Rostov at Allianz Arena, and Borussia Dortmund are going to Warsaw to play Legia Warsaw. So, but the interesting matchup that's going to happen is Manchester City against Borussia Mönchengladbach. That's probably the group of death. I think we can all agree on that. With Barcelona in that group as well.
And Celtic.
Of course. And, of course, Barcelona looks like they sat their forwards to make sure that they can...
Wise move.
Beat
against
Celtic.
The might of Dembele.
So, but getting back to Gladbach, they lost at the weekend pretty emphatically to SC Freiburg. And after a 4-game winning streak throughout the season, this was kind of, I think, a little bit surprising. To see that result on the fixture list. So, Ross, what do you think happened that game? And what do you think? Is this basically everybody coming back down to earth, or do you think it's just one-off game?
They can't defend. Simple as that. They can't defend. You know, they had one away clean sheet last year all season against Darmstadt on the final day. I away from home, they have this kind of thing where they don't really respond well to pressure. Schubert is very rigid tactically in terms of, you know, he wants players to be in specific places at the right time. It's very intense. And I think there are some players in that team maybe just aren't kind of coping with it. You're looking at this, the way they capitulated. I mean, they won 1-0 up with Hazard. Great finish. But by the way, he's having a great season so far in all competitions.
Better than his brother.
Yeah, true. He's really doing superbly this year. But defensively, there's still massive doubts. I think we can talk about him being Mo Dahoud in terms of, you know, this guy was built up as being the next German sensation, and all of a sudden he's not in the team. And I think that's because Schubert is trying to almost kind of give a better shield to the back four, to the back three. Kramer and Strobel have been in there. I don't know, I'm not a big fan of Kramer. I think he's a very limited player.
No, me too.
Strobel's not much better either.
No, he's not. I think maybe they need a player like that, just to be a bit more assured in possession and be able to break the lines.
But don't you think that against City, there's intrigue about this game because Gladbach were actually a side when Guardiola was in the Premier League that caused them a lot of problems, you know? Don't you think that's going to... Obviously, City are flying at the moment, but...
I think there's definitely weaknesses in that City team. They'll probably try and exploit it. I mean, I think Andrew Hahn will probably play.
Yeah.
He's a bit more powerful, a bit more of a presence. But you saw, I think, last year when Gladbach played Man City, they were pretty good, you know, at home and away. Even though they lost at home, they were still a good side. So I think they'll do quite well in the group stages this year. I think I know they've got Barcelona and Man City there, but I think this team is capable of turning up. And you mentioned the same thing about Leverkusen before we came on air, but I think for Gladbach, second time they've been in the Champions League group stage, is this kind of the first real run at it they've had? Because obviously Favre left after two games in the group stages. This is the first time they've had a real shot at it. And I think for the club going forward, they want, you know, they want progression, they want to be one of the top four teams in Germany every year. This is really important for them, and if they can, you know, guarantee European football after Christmas, then that'll be more important for them this year than how they do in the Bundesliga.
I think I think you're right. I think ultimately, I think what comes into Gladbach is that their team's set up to really play well against teams who take the game to them. That seems to be the general theme for me. Like,
so was that? Do you think that was the problem on the weekend then?
I think that's part of it. Yeah, I think that's why he did so well in the Champions League last season under Schubert. That's why he did so well against Leverkusen last week, and ultimately why he didn't do so against Freiburg, because Freiburg at Freiburg play the way that Gladbach play at Gladbach. You know, so I think that both. I think playing against a team like Man City in the form they're in right now is perhaps, you know, the ultimate or impossible task, but I think if there's a team that's well set up to play big teams in the Champions League, I think Gladbach are really good, and they've got some, they're so good on the break. I think Ross makes a good point that defensively they are vulnerable, but maybe that's because, and that's probably perhaps best illustrated when they try and dominate a game against a lesser side and then they leave space to back.
Gaps.
But when they play bigger teams and the whole team is sitting back waiting to pounce, they look a lot stronger, I think. But I agree with you about Kramer, though. I really have no idea what's going on with the Hood right now. There's a lot of question marks over why he's not playing. Schubert was very dismissive of him, actually, leading into this game in the press conference. He said, someone asked about the Hood, and he's like, well, you know, he's a kid, he's still got a lot to learn. This is a kid who actually tore the Bundesliga apart last season within reason, breakthrough season, and he looked like the really complete player. And then to sign Kramer, who's, I agree with Ross, good to a point but very limited, and then just drop him into Hood's place and, you know, demote the Hood to the bench or the under-21s is really quite upsetting,
but
actually.
That's why it could be so interesting to see them against, you know, City and Barcelona, two teams who are obviously going to control the game. You know, because I don't think I've seen,
do you not think Celtic will control the game?
I don't think I've seen, you know, other than Bayern perhaps in their opening game, I don't think I've seen a side play more fluidly and more attractively than Gladbach have on the break. I mean, they just, so the passing, it's just,
you know,
so
else?
Wonderful as well.
Sorry, I've left.
Well, so what, if that's the case, if their passing is so wonderful, why wasn't it there on the weekend?
Well, because as Steph said, they're playing against a team where they're expected to dominate, you know, and they are then in charge, and they struggle with that because the gaps are left at the back, and then Freiburg do what Gladbach do to other teams.
You also have to remember, this, much like the Dortmund game, Freiburg are no pushovers. They lost just two games at home last season. Cheers, it's Weibo Bundesliga, so it's different.
But Christian Streich is no fool. You know, he knows the league, he knows the team, and you got to give...
Adjusted his defence.
They've got so much respect for Freiburg and Streich, because every year they lose these players that play well in the Bundesliga, and they either get relegated or they lose the big names, and yet they stick around, you know, and they come back. And you've got to remember the goals against Gladbach were bloody brilliant. Great goals.
Well, that's what I was going to say, actually. Thorgan Hazard, despite, even if Gladbach didn't play so well, he again played really well, I thought.
Anybody with two first names in their name, Maximilian Philipp, you know, like, kudos for a great goal.
So really interesting to see how he does, because I made a point, very minor point, that he's not far off the form his brother was showing at Lille. I know it's only early days.
He's been better than his brother this season, I think.
But I mean, just like at that stage of their careers, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this thing, because we've talked a lot about how deep Gladbach is and how they have a lot of the same players. Who do you think is the best combination of those four guys, being Raphael, Lars Stindl, Torgan Hazard, and Andre Hahn? Do you think Schubert knows the answer to that?
No, I think it varies from game to game. I think as well, and in a way, he has to pick, because they're all quite similar. You know, he likes pacey wingers who are good in the one-on-one situation. Raphael's absolutely integral to sort of the pivot of that attack on the counter-attack. Andre Hahn, as you said, Ross, is more of a bull. He's a bit stronger. He's got the flexibility to do that, but they're all very good at the same thing, and they're all absolutely on the same page. So I don't think it matters too much which personnel play in those positions.
Okay, but obviously the Champions League, their Champions League opponent is a lot... This isn't the Bundesliga anymore.
No.
These are the top sides in Europe, so... Does Schubert need to figure out who his best players are? Do you think he can just adjust to basically who's in form?
Yeah, I think he can. Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes into European football, I think Schubert will be more adaptable. I think he will tinker with his selection to suit the opposition. Yeah, I mean, actually think, I wouldn't say they're over-relying on Hazard, but so far, I think if he's not in the team, it's a little bit of a problem. I know that Raphael and Stindl are good together, they've got really good understanding with each other, but he's a guy on the break who's rapid. Traore as well has been excellent in that right wing back position. I mean, he's adapted from being a left-sided winger to being right wing back, basically.
I mean, I would say that position is probably his now, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, I thought when Korb gets fit, maybe he would get in there, but you said there on the counter attack. I think actually just the fact that he's left footed. You know, if you're right footed, you have a limited kind of scope where you can play the ball. But if you're left footed, you have a whole pitch to open up. And you look at there was one situation in that Leverkusen game where Traore's body was kind of inside, and he was able to just basically diagonally right through the Leverkusen defence. And I think that's a real asset to them.
And look at the way that Hazard assisted that goal to at the end as well, to Stindl. That pass was, and he just came on, right?
That's a really interesting point of Ross, isn't it? Because when you expect teams to counter-attack at pace, you expect the fullbacks to run the length of the wing, swing the ball in.
Yeah.
Gladbach get to a point and then they just kind of like cut inside.
Yeah.
Like the two wings just kind of run into the middle.
It's like a mini army of Iron Robins.
So the other question
FC
is
Robin.
Of course, it's going to be a long road for Gladbach in the Champions League. Do they have to get a result out of this game, or do you think that they can basically get an encouraging performance, not get the 3 points, and maybe try to get that second spot?
I think they're going to be third. Yeah. I don't think they're going to be in the top two spots.
So that's our. You think that's?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I think it's predetermined. Yeah,
I think the games against Celtic are probably the ones. That
yeah, and then it's just a case of Europa League. I mean, I spoke to a couple of Gladbach fans, and they were like, "Yeah, it's great we're in the Champions League, but you know what? Another year where we've got a group where we know we're not going to finish in the top two is frustrating." Because I think what you're saying, Ross, about wanting to establish themselves in the European stage is totally right. But it's really hard to do that when Manchester City and Barcelona are the two teams in your group.
Yeah.
You want to be playing in the knockout rounds. And let's be honest, the quality of their football, they deserve to be there. But it's going to be, I think, impossible for them to get there.
The argument for UEFA coefficiency starts again.
Well, that'll probably suit them perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably happy they don't have to do playoffs. But it's frustrating when you don't do the playoffs. And then you go straight into Europa League.
So now now that we've talked about the biggest game, let's just run through them quickly. So Dortmund, what do you expect from that game in Warsaw?
Yeah, I think Dortmund should expect to win that. Bayern as well, as I think probably both easy wins.
It's a tough game for Dortmund because Legia Warsaw will probably play a little bit like Leipzig. It'll be a really intense, big atmosphere. They've got a brand new stadium there.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a really, really interesting game.
Got to respond.
Yeah. All right, what about Bayern against Rostov? Does Rostov even stand a chance?
This is a traditional Bayern Munich strolling in the Champions League park.
Yeah.
Dinamo Zagreb last year 5-0, of course, in Allianz Arena.
There are enough examples.
All right, so Leverkusen with their new Finnish striker. They go and they're going to be playing CSKA Moscow. And obviously, Moscow's been in the Champions League a long time. What do we expect quickly from that game?
I think we actually need to see something quite strong from Leverkusen this game, because for anyone who didn't watch the game, their game against Hamburg, they actually could have very easily lost. It was just a sheer moment of madness from this Finnish striker. He comes on, scores a hat-trick out of nothing. Hamburg looked really good for the win up until that point, actually, until he brought the sog on, which I'm not sure if that's a coincidence or not. But couple that with the opening day performance against Gladbach, and Leverkusen could so easily be sitting here with no points after two games.
Mm-hmm.
Performances haven't really suggested anything otherwise, so I think they should be able to beat CSKA, and I really want to see them. I think the fans really want to see Schmidt really push on and get his team playing.
Champions League is big for them.
Yeah,
very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be a hard game, but yeah, like I said, I agree. I think Leverkusen need to make a statement, because I know that they've got Spurs in their group, but Leverkusen
should finish
could
second in
finish
that group.
Top in
oh,
that group.
Could finish top
could
as well.
Could finish top in that group, because last year they showed in some big games that they are a side that's of top quality.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about them being one of the best sides in Germany, so they have to deliver.
They'd have to do it without Bellarabi now, so that's a plus.
Yeah,
and they just keep playing this 4-4-2 with Çalhanoğlu. Maybe I think that's part of the reason why
stop playing a player who's so off his form.
Yeah.
In the wrong position.
Anyway, so I think I want to see something big from Leverkusen in this game.
All right, in the game that we just talked about, Gladbach against Manchester City, can they get a result in Manchester? No.
I think they might pop a scare, but I think Man City will win.
Yes, they can get a result.
I think so, too. All right, so now we're at the point of the show where we want to shout something from the tribuna. So, John, we'll start with you since you're on the left side of me. What do you want to shout from the tribuna this week?
Well, other than my defense of Mario Götze, which I think we've done and dealt with, because I like to think of the human. I will say that I'm a little bit disappointed at Mario Gomez's performance. I've got a lot of time for Mario Gomez. Anyone who has followed me will know that, not just because of his outstanding hair. But, you know, coming to Wolfsburg, basically saying, I'm going to be the guy that's going to get you back into the Champions League, turning down offers to go.
Did he say that?
He's saying, look, you know, I want to come here and get us back onto the international stage and be the guy who delivers on the perspective at this club. I think it's pretty clear. And I think in his contract he has a get-out clause if they're not in the European football next year anyway. Mm. I was disappointed. He had chances to score. He had chances that you would expect Mario Gomez. There are, in fact, Mario Gomez chances, particularly late on in the game, that cross into the box where he's on the apex of the six-yard box and he fluffs it. And it's very disappointing because that's what a lot of people will have expected from him. But I think it's really, really important for Wolfsburg that he scores those goals. And if he doesn't, then they're going to be in trouble. So an improvement, please, Mario.
All right, Stefan, what do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week?
My point was almost that I love the new Wolfsburg top so much. I can't help it. I think it's so nice. Anyway, that's not my point. My point is actually Hertha. I thought Vedad Visevic, another goal, another win for Hertha. I think I mentioned this already this season, but I think a lot of people were worried that, you know, Hertha were going to stumble back down the league. And it looks they've held on to key players, particularly Visevic, who's now the captain. John and I were talking about this over the weekend, how I think someone, I can't remember who it was, asked, you know, where's this guy been all his career? And we're saying, you know, at Stuttgart and stuff, his personality kept getting in the way of things. And it seems like he's really settled in at Hertha. Dardai's given him the captaincy role and he's thriving. And I'd just like to see, it's two wins and two for Hertha, which, you know, it's still early days, but it's nice to see them doing well and Ibisevic being focal to that.
It's good for the capital as well. Stops lots of people from Berlin starting to support Leipzig.
All right, Ross, what do you want to shout from the Tribune
I'm
this week?
I'm surprised there's no mention for Julian Schieber, man. Two goals.
Julian Schieber, super sub.
Tearing it up.
He would be good for, you know, like a Borussia Dortmund. Oh, wait.
He was interviewed after the game and he was absolutely beaming. Like, grin from ear to ear, like, this is where I deserve to be.
Won't have to buy another beer in Berlin again. I want to shout Mark Guth from the Tribune. I think he's looked really good so far.
Mark Guth, that was, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was coming with you. So far his shot efficiency has been great. Six shots in goal so far in two games, three goals. It's pretty impressive. Technically, a really good player. I think out of the three forwards that Offenheim usually play, I think he's probably the most impressive. I think he'll hit double figures this year.
The thing I want to shout is we actually talked about it last week because it was a big game for them, but Werder Bremen losing again to Augsburg. And as I mentioned last week, Viktor Skripman is already under the microscope, despite the fact that basically Thomas Eichen, the public reason why Thomas Eichen lost his job is because he wanted to fire Viktor Skripnik and the board did not. But now in two games, they're at the bottom of the table. They've lost to two Bavarian clubs, and I have no idea how this club can get better. I mean, Serge Gnabry is great, but they can't fix all their problem with one attacker. So we'll see what happens with them this year. I think that it's going to be another case of a historical Bundesliga team going down, and maybe they can rekindle something, but
It's worth noting for anyone who didn't catch the Bundesliga season this week that Gnabry did start and he looked okay.
Yeah, he has to be more than okay.
Oh, no, sure.
Even solve any of the problems that they've been having.
Yeah, but I actually think the Werder Bremen, not to drag this out, but you know, defensively remains their biggest issue. You know, like, it's all great signing a winger that's got some skills and has impressed recently, but stop conceding goals.
Especially from set pieces.
Well, and they tried to address that. I mean, they tried to address that in the summer.
And
they
failed.
A whole new situation, and they failed. So I really don't know what else they can do at this point.
Well, I think make smarter tactical decisions. You talked about it before, Ross, but
I think the expectation is they're going to change their goalkeeper. Wiedwald probably will go on the bench, and Drogny might come in.
Yeah. Well, I read this morning that he's going to stay in goal.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Just on the topic of aloof defenders. Hinteregger came in for his against Augsburg and gave him a penalty, which was something to
Martin aloof funny. Hinteregger, there you go. New name.
So.
Alright, so that'll do it for this week of the Tribuna Weekly. You can follow us on Twitter. Ross is on at RossDunbar93, Stefan at SBankowski, and Jonathan at JohnBlog60Tix, two G's like two sixes, and I'm at Davis_VanOptorp. So thank you guys for listening this week, and we'll hope to hear you next week. See ya.